You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You don't go off with your brother's missus, do you? End podcast. Such.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Planet FPL, the world where everything revolves around Fantasy Premier League. But it's the summer, James. The world revolves around European football.
How you doing? You're right. My name's James. We're here to talk about Welsh dragons today. We're not going to spend half hour talking about Welsh fantasy Euro assets. I don't think there's much point. Just buy Gareth Bale and close the book, right?
Did Wales qualify?
Easy. But they didn't qualify easy. I'm saying easy that they did qualify. Left themselves a little bit dangerous after losing a couple of away games early in the qualification campaign. But they are here again, following a great showing in 2016. I'm delighted to introduce to you Ross Caulfield at Corf FPO is here with us to talk about Wales today. How are you, Ross?
Good morning, boys. Thanks for having me on. It's an absolute pleasure to be on the pod. Just excited for this tournament to kick off now.
Good man. I'm definitely going to need you to hold that mic up, mate.
After the success when you got to the semis and stuff, I suppose, I mean, that was definitely overachievement. I think anyone in Wales would admit that. But you do have a decent squad of players. And I think it's one of those where maybe the sum of the parts of the team is perhaps even better than the individuals if you listed them as 11.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things we've got really that most other maybe teams international football wise haven't got is that camaraderie, you know, that team spirit. And I mean, I go back to probably about 2015 when we introduced this hashtag, you know, Together Stronger campaign and stuff. And I can remember looking at it thinking it's a little bit kind of cheesy, I guess, you know, Together Stronger. But actually it kind of, it's really worked and it's really brought everyone together, the fans, the team. It's just been a huge, what the FAW have put in place, you know. I mean, you can go back probably about 2011, probably when Gary Speed was appointed. That was the game changer for us. And we've just been on a massive, massive uprise since, I guess. And just delighted to be in another major tournament. I mean, France was a bucket list achievement. I mean, I missed my cousin's wedding to go there because I told my missus... I told my missus it was a one-off and I'd probably never see it again. And here we are again just a few years later. So it's, she's looking at me a bit strangely at times thinking, yeah, you lied there. But it's just great to be there.
I think, well done for mentioning Gary Speed because I think that's really important. I was watching some highlights from 2016 last night and a lot of interviews with the players, even Chris Coleman, they all spoke so glowingly about Gary Speed and the fact that he'd initiated the change. I think when he took over, I think your world ranking, I'm right in saying, was around about 115th in the world, which you then peaked at a high of 8th in the world in 2015. So, I mean, that transformation, I think it's the biggest jump by anyone in the world rankings ever over like a four-year period.
Yeah. Well, and he did it within a year. I mean, obviously, I think it was like August. I had a look this morning. It was August 2011. We were ranked 117th, and I was behind Faroe Islands. I mean,
they won 5-1 last night. Just saying. Yeah.
But Liechtenstein. I thought you were going to say San Marino.
The mighty Liechtenstein, mate.
Yeah, but obviously, we were like the fifth worst team in European football, and that's just shocking, really, to where we were at. I mean, you know, when I was kind of coming through with football and Welsh football and stuff, you know, go back to 2002 when we were playing in the Millennium Stadium in front of 74,000 against Italy, you know, beating Italy. And the demise following that, you know, I mean, I looked this morning, it was 2009. I can remember going to watch Wales against Estonia in front of 4,000 people in Llanelli, and 4,000 people is just, we were at such a slump and such a low. And like Gary Speed came in, and I mean, the main things he did, he made our international team more professional. It's a given for you boys who with England and stuff, but you know, the heart monitors and just kind of, you know, back when Ryan Giggs was kind of, you know, playing, you know, when we go back to 2002 and stuff, we were training on school pitches and stuff. It really was that bad, and Welsh football, and you know, to where we are now. I mean, yeah, he took us within, it was just before his death, actually. I think we beat Norway, and he took us inside the top 50, and yeah, we've just continued to go since. I mean, like, to get up to eight, to a top 10, to actually overtake England in the FIFA World Rankings was just, it was just mental, to be honest.
Can I ask Ross, how old are you?
32.
So you probably maybe do a little bit remember the qualifying campaign for USA 94, maybe. You're probably a little bit young, but you've probably seen highlights and clips of the Bowden missed penalty against Romania, because obviously then you had strong attacking players, Saunders, Rush, Giggs, Speed. There was a good team then that then kind of eked away for 15 years or so, that it felt like the generational talent wasn't coming through it anymore. And obviously, as you said, Speed obviously took it on. It's interesting there you mentioned England in terms of taking things for granted in terms of England and training facilities, etc. Is it really important to be better than England? Because another thing I picked up on from the highlights that I was watching last night, again in interviews, there was a lot of, we're better than England, we've gone further than England, shouldn't you just be enjoying what you're doing? Because I think most of us here, I won't speak for everybody, but I think up to a certain point, we were all like, go on, Wales, like, do the business. We were all quite pleased for you, other than obviously when you played us in Lons, I think the game was in 2016. Up to probably the semi-finals, we were like, okay, that's enough now. but generally, we wanted you to do quite well. Is it really important? Is there a strong Wales-England rivalry? Is it important to be or at least match England? And I know expectations, I think you're the smallest nation ever to actually get to the last four of the Euros. So no one's saying you should be as good as England, but is that really important to Welsh fans?
No, I just think England are that benchmark, I guess, when we look at British football and stuff. Obviously, you're the people we aspire to, we can match ourselves with, well, and we shouldn't be matching ourselves with, I guess. So obviously, just to, like I said, just to be into it in a major tournament is dreamy for us. And you know, when I was in Lons that day, and I don't really want to talk too much about that day.
Yeah, we can talk about it.
but yeah, just, I suppose, like, yeah, I'd say there's a little bit of, I may get butchered from some Welsh fans, but it's that little brother rivalry, I guess, where we're always trying to outdo England, or try to match you at least, because like I say, you set the benchmark. I mean, your pool of players is just chalk and cheese between ours, you know, and it's always been that. So, and you've got to have some sort of competition. I mean, obviously yourselves with the Scots at times, you can have a bit of a rivalry there, and it's like, I suppose, yeah, we rely on you a lot for that.
I think rather than little brother, if I can just say, it's more like the cousin's wedding, you wouldn't turn up. A better analogy. Go on, so sorry.
Yeah, I don't know if... obviously, we do have a bigger pool of players in England, but then there's just more people live here. Do you know what I mean? It's whatever, 60-odd million in England versus how many people in Wales? 2-3 million, maybe more, probably more. But I don't know what your thoughts are in terms of... obviously, the English and Welsh League, I mean, Welsh teams play in the English League in terms of Cardiff, Swansea and so on, whereas Scottish teams have their own league. And I don't know, James, if you think even that having Cardiff, Swansea, so on in our leagues softens it a little bit, because you kind of look at it as one, whereas Scotland's completely separate with their own league. I don't really know if that really has an impact on international football.
Who's your team, Corf?
Cardiff.
Yeah, I thought so. I just didn't want to say, just in case I was wrong. but am I right to say Swansea came up first? I think I'm right in saying that. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking that I was a little bit I'd never had a problem with the Cardiff, Swansea's and Wrexham's being part of the league. But well, I think when Swansea came up, there was a little bit of a, should they really be here? A little bit. But I mean, in comparing the Welsh and the Scottish leagues, I know Scotland's very much dominated by two teams now and has been for the majority, but there are several professional football clubs in Scotland, in Wales, with are Wrexham still professional?
Yeah,
so you've probably got four only that are professional, I would have thought.
Yeah.
Newport being the other one.
And then obviously, like, there's Merthyr, who are in the lower echelons.
Brilliantly named Merthyr Tydfil. What a name that is. It's one of the Welsh names I can pronounce. That's what I'm happy to say. but that's kind of the point. You couldn't, Cardiff, Swansea, Wrexham couldn't be in the league. But as Suj says, is there any links there in the fact that you've always played against English teams constantly? So if you've gone to watch your club side away from home, invariably you've been in England, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that does play its part, I guess. And obviously with Wales built on, I guess, obviously a lot of people would say the rugby side of things, there's always been that rivalry between Welsh and English rugby and stuff in the Five Nations, Six Nations and stuff. So I don't know if that impacts it. I mean, I'm not trying to make it like into a, I wouldn't say it's like a massive rivalry. I don't think like we kind of hang up on hating England or anything like that, really. It's just a case of, I think it's the media side of things, and it probably does your heads in, but it's obviously, if England do well, it's like, it's absolutely everywhere and you can't escape it. Whereas, yeah, it's a small bit of jealousy there, I guess, you know, to be honest. Like I said, it's that little brother rivalry, and this, but yeah, it's not, I don't think we kind of go out to think we've got to beat England or we've got to outdo England, because we don't expect that, I guess.
Do you feel like there's more passion towards football in Wales now since those Euros 5 years ago? Because I think a lot of us would have probably got Rugby Nation link. Has that kind of leveled out a bit now?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, it's a bit of a myth that Wales is a rugby nation, I guess, because you've only got to go down the pitches on a Saturday morning, and there's 20 games of football going on to every like two rugby, and it's, you know, when we look at Wales, you know, Swansea, Cardiff, you know, they're getting crowds of 30,000 odd, and you know, the Ospreys and stuff are really struggling. So it is known for its rugby, but it's more or less just an excuse for a piss up in Wales, to be honest. but that's what it is, you know. I'd look at my parents, you know, and they wouldn't put the rugby on the telly if it's like, you know, the Blues against the Ospreys, but five days of the year when Six Nations comes round, it's the biggest thing ever to them, and like I say, it's a piss up for them, and that's what it comes down to, really. But
I think the English psyche on that is, because when you beat us at rugby, it doesn't come as a huge shock.
No, exactly. I think the expectation in rugby is to beat England, and Wales has spent a large part of the last 20, 30 years better than England. Whereas in football, if you beat England, it's just a party and a bonus. But you never had the expectation going in to beat England. But you do necessarily with the rugby. How do you feel about the squad going into the tournament? Because there's a number of players in there with Premier League experience, but you wouldn't necessarily say maybe perhaps the best Premier League experience. I mean, David Brooks, loved him when he was in the Premier League with Bournemouth, good football player. But again, he ended up getting relegated and perhaps a little bit lightweight. Same with Harry Wilson. Ethan Ampadu had a decent enough, I mean, season at Sheffield United, so he's got experience, but again, they got relegated. So a lot of these players, even Dan James, kind of in the background, I feel like they've all got a bit of experience, but maybe not quite elite or enough.
Yeah. And that's part of, I mean, like I said, for me, I'm just, like, there is a small, I speak to some people and there is an expectation of, oh, what if we go again? What if things click again and we kind of hit the quarterfinals? I'm just, it sounds quite defeatist, but I'm just grateful to be there first and foremost. The lower my expectations, the more I can kind of enjoy it, I guess. Whereas if I was going in thinking we can get out of that group, you know, and I think we can, you know, I just think, I mean, when I look at that, our first team, obviously we rely on We rely on no injuries. I mean, it's been massive to us that obviously Ben Davis, Joe Allen and Ampadu have come back from injuries to make the squad, because these players who have played Premier League football, they just give us invaluable experience alongside some, you know, because our second string, it's Championship level. And, you know, so, I mean, as a team, I think it would be really difficult to beat. I think, as looking in the 8 games under Rob Page, since he, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about Rob Page and Brian Giggs and stuff in a little bit, but you know, the 8 games we've kept 5 clean sheets, and I look at Group A and Italy, Switzerland and Turkey, and I think they're all really tough games to beat. I don't think there's many goals at all in that group, to be honest. I think so. We could scrape a 1-0 or 2, you know, we could.
You're also going to have the disadvantage, one of the games you got in Baku against Turkey, I've heard you're likely to be seriously outnumbered in terms of fans. It's likely to actually be like a home game for Turkey. I think they're going to take about 15,000 out there. I think you're only going to be able to take about 2,000. I mean, that's not been helpful to you, how far away as well. Is Italy your middle game as well? Was it the last game?
The last game, yeah. The hope is obviously
Italy win the first 2 games and they rotate the team for the last team, which Republic of Ireland had exactly that against Italy in 2016, if you remember. It's interesting to go back to that tournament for yourselves. It was the same issue then. Once you stripped past the first 11, there were a lot of Championship, League One players even, who were levels below. Gareth is not the player that he was 5 years ago. I think at that period, he was legitimately one of, certainly in the top 10 players in the world, if not top 5. So you don't have that extreme X factor anymore. I think one of the concerns I'd have is that some of the experience defensively is gone. So it was kind of Ashley Williams' kind of last real peak period. He was massive for you 5 years ago. James Chester played the majority of the games, did quite well for you after actually quite a bad Premier League season. Ben Davis is obviously still there. Who are you expecting to play amongst the back three and in goal actually as well?
Yeah, again, since Page has taken charge, I think his favourite's Danny Ward, and he's done really well in the games he's played recently. So, you know, Hennessy's a cult hero for Wales, really. You know, he's done us well, and he's overachieved for us, I guess, at times. But I think Danny Ward will start, and then I think there'll be obviously Joe Roden, Chris Meppham, and then I think Ben Davis will play as a left centre-half with probably Connor Roberts right wing-back and Nico Williams maybe left wing-back. But obviously it can alternate with, obviously Davis can go left-back, and then maybe Ampadu can sit into the defence then to make that back five. But I can't see us playing a back four. I think we'll definitely start as a back five.
Danny Ward's an interesting one that a lot of people might not be aware, but he's 27. He's Leicester's backup goalkeeper. Was backup goalkeeper at Liverpool before, had a brilliant loan spell at Aberdeen. He's actually quite highly rated, but just never really had a proper opportunity. I definitely a better goalkeeper than Hennessy for me. I know he's been great for you for a long number of years. He's on 96 caps as well, so he's probably begging to get to the 100. But I would have thought Danny Ward is the best choice for you in goal. I'd be surprised, because of that experience issue that I said. I mean, Rodon is young. He's been in and out the Tottenham team this year. He's not played that often. He's got 14 caps. Chris Meffin's got 18 caps. I'd be surprised if Davis got moved out of the back three. Or do you think there's a possibility he might play a back four at times then?
I don't think we really suit it. I think if Ampadu sits into the defence, what Ampadu has the ability to do is step up into midfield, which would allow for a natural back four when maybe moving forward. So it's obviously we can kind of, if Ampadu steps up as the middle centre half, it allows us maybe to have like Joe Roden, Meppham, Roberts, and then obviously Davis moving out to left back. But we naturally kind of, since Coleman took charge, obviously that back five kind of speaks for itself, I guess. I think that's just the way we play. You know, we just make ourselves tough to beat first and foremost.
Nico Williams at left wing back might scare people.
Yeah.
I don't mean as in scare the opposition. I mean the idea of him playing that position.
Yeah. No, I agree. But I think we've got a boy, Reece Norrington Davis. I don't know if you're aware of him, but he's given a really good account of himself in the games that he's played, and I quite like the way he puts himself about a bit. You know, we've got a bit of like I say, we're talking championship players then, but I think Nico Williams, he's done a job for us. He has played left wing back a couple of times, so yeah.
Tom, there's a few guys in the squad from Luton who a lot of listeners might be unfamiliar with. Tom Lockyer, who's been given a number 5 shirt, and Joe Morel, who's a midfielder. What's their chance of being involved with the team?
I think Joe Morel, again, if the odds part, I don't think either will start. Joe Morel is quite, even though he struggled at Luton this year, he's quite well thought of at Wales, and he has always, again, he's always given a good account to himself. And that's the one thing that Wales have got is players who have always seemed to excel when they play for internationally. Like, you know, some players we've had, you've only got to look at Hal Robson-Kanu. You know, I think he's a bang average footballer, and then he goes and skins a Belgian defence out in the quarterfinals of the Euros. And yeah, I think the toughest thing is, obviously, when we look at the front three, what Page has preferred to play is Harry Wilson's false nine. When we played against Albania last week, Ramsey played as a false nine. And I actually quite like that. I quite like the idea of having Bale, Ramsey and Dan James. But if Ramsey comes into midfield alongside Joe Allen, then that would allow Ampadu to go back into centre-half. So it's a bit of rotation, and we have got a bit of flexibility amongst the squad. But yeah, I can't see... Lockie's always done all right for us. He was a centre-half pairing alongside Chris Meppham when Joe Roden was injured for quite a period. And he's done well for us, but he's just backup, I guess.
Do you think probably Joe Allen plus Ramsey or Ampadu in the central pairing in midfield, Ampadu if Ramsey's going to play false nine, and you think possibly Harry Wilson false nine if Ramsey plays deeper? Obviously Bale will play. Who does that leave playing with? Is it Daniel James?
Yeah, Dan James, with, and then obviously David Brooks as backup. It's been interesting because Ryan Giggs was basically building a team around Kiefer Moore.
He's a handful. He's a unit.
He is, but you know what I'd say for Rob Page, and he's hardly played under Page, and I think that's because international football, every time he wins a header, he loses a free kick. It's like he's getting booked. He's just not suited to international football. I mean, obviously in the championship and stuff, he can put himself about. Internationally, every single time he goes up for a header, he's getting penalised. And this, I think Rob Page has just said, yeah, we're not gonna kind of build our team around that. So,
yeah, any physical contact, European football, international football, you get penalised basically. Over aggressiveness, he's obviously an extremely powerful player. I think the problem with him is as well, you need to get players close to him, or there's an issue. He's got to be coming backwards with his header rather than people flicking on and running behind. That's less likely to happen in international football. No, I've spoke to a few other people who said they quite like this false nine idea. It gives you a little bit of control in midfield as well. Kind of leaves defenders unoccupied where they don't know whether to come out. And you've got people like, obviously, James and Bale. If the ball's right and they can come in off the flanks and go centrally, you can cause some dangers on counter-attacks there, no doubt about that. So, yeah, I would have thought, personally, my own opinion would be get Ramsey back in midfield. And that might lose you a little something up front, but I mean, he's a top player still, isn't he?
Yeah. It's how defensive we want to play it, I guess. And I think, obviously, Ramsey's so good at that box-to-box stuff. And again, I go back to the Euros and, you know, there was a time when I used to think Ramsey was kind of a bit average for Wales, I guess. I know that sounds a bit surprising, but he was brilliant in 2016. He was absolutely incredible. His vision, we just need, if we can have him, what I like about him in false nine is he's allowed to float a little bit. I mean, in our friendly against Albania, you know, he just kind of just played a free role. You know, he wasn't strictly a false nine. He kind of came back, picked up the ball, travelled with it. And he just, his vision and his kind of, his football brain drags the players out. which allows for that gap in behind for James and Bale to utilise, I guess. But because when we go further back, I mean, Allen and Ampadu, you know, there's not a lot of creativity defensively. And even from wide areas, you know, when we're looking at Nico Williams and Connor Roberts, I mean, they're not your Trent and Robos for Liverpool. You know, they're not going to bomb forward and deliver pinpoint crosses either. So we are heavily reliant on, I'd say, on Ramsey to create the chances, I guess.
I've not really seen Nico Williams much on the left, but when he was playing on the right for Liverpool, James gave him the nickname Baby Trent. So
did I?
Yeah, didn't you call him Baby Trent?
Nah, last season.
But I've always thought he's got a bit of attacking ability. But I think the thing is with the way your squad is, and we've talked about, I mean, the depth isn't incredible. But when you have a player like Ramsey and a player like Bale, they can win you a game by themselves. And so you really are reliant on, okay, let's get the defensive setup solid and then give them the ball and hopefully let them create something and win a game. Like, Gareth Bale dragging you through the group stages on his own is not something that would surprise me. For example, if you keep it tight and Bale comes in with a couple of goals in any game, anytime. And a lot of the smaller nations, they don't have that one world-class star in a Bale and a Ramsey not far behind. So that's definitely to Wales's advantage, that compared to some of the other teams, you do have the superstars, a couple of them anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I say, though, we, you know, when I go back and look at 2016, I think, obviously, there's a part of me that thinks, you know, obviously, Bale, I think he got three goals in that tournament. But what Bale does is he just, people will double up on him. Like, and they'll kind of, which obviously allows spaces in other areas. And like I say, I think for me, I mean, you know, I know we're not talking fancy assets, but that's why I think I probably prefer Dan James over him, because I think that focus will always be on kind of Bale doubling up and just making sure he doesn't do anything. And that just allows so much, it just allows for gaps. I mean, you've only got to give him the ball. And like I've been, you know, last year when Spurs obviously signed Bale, I was one of his biggest critics, I guess, because he's my hero. He's like, he's everything that, you know.
Mine too, mate, by the way.
I absolutely love the man. Like, honestly, he could do unspeakable things to me, but it's when, just before that move, obviously, when he wasn't playing for Madrid and stuff, he was coming and he'd always give his best for Wales, but I just thought he was on a huge, huge decline. And I can remember playing against, I'm not sure, it was someone bang average. It was like an Andorra-esque team, and the left back was like, he wasn't offering anything defensively, but Bale just wasn't kind of pushing that ball past him. And I just thought, I don't know if it was a confidence thing, a fitness thing, or both, but I just thought, yeah, I thought he was done for. But
I think he suffered with injuries, obviously, confidence, which seems remarkable for a player who was that good. But I think when you know you're on a decline, that must be quite a difficult thing to kind of accept from your body perspective, because we, all three of us will have seen him go and win games for Wales and Tottenham on his own.
Yeah, the confidence thing is a weird one. I don't think it's a lack of confidence in your ability. It becomes a lack of trust in your body. Like,
yes,
if you sprint, you can break down.
He still kicks the ball, sure, the same way, yeah, etc.
He still knows that he can stick it in the top corner. I mean, how many times did he do it this season? But it's more, right, if I sprint and I break down, it's that demoralising effect of repetitive injuries that gives you a lack of trust in your body. I think that's where the confidence issue comes from.
Yeah, but I'm quietly confident. You know, despite not featuring as much as maybe he'd have liked for Spurs this year, I think, you know, what he's done well, you know, at times. And I think he's shown that he's still got that eye for goal and he can still produce something special. And, you know, that's what we'd be heavily reliant on, because there's not a lot of goals on our side. If we're going to win games, it'll be 1-0. We're not going to be the most entertaining of teams in this tournament, but I think we'll give a good account of ourselves. And, you know, I wouldn't want to write this off the group stage. It's hope, though. But it's hope.
I think what Bale showed, and it was proven in the stats, wasn't it, James, that he doesn't need a lot of opportunities and he doesn't need a lot of minutes. It's as simple as that. Even if he only...
Well, him from 18 yards is like most players from 6 yards, mate.
Yeah.
If he's got a free shot on goal. So, I mean, the power in his shooting is still ridiculous. I guess one concern, as opposed to, say, 5 years ago, if Wales do get to, say, the last 16 quarterfinals, can he play every 4 days like he did 5 years ago? And I would say that's extremely doubtful. But there's no way that Wales are going to get to a last 16 match and leave him out. There's no, oh, well, it's a bit knackered. We'll bring him on for the last 20 minutes. It's not going to happen. He's going to play. So I think he knows as well he needs to manage his body. I know there's times this year for Tottenham where he's advised the medical staff to say, I don't think I should start today. He ain't going to do that in the summer for Wales. He's just going to play. So there is a danger there. And I think, you know, if I think we're probably in a different situation now where if Wales are leading against Switzerland 1-0 with 20 minutes to go, you might see Bale come off, that kind of situation, just to try and save him for the next. If you're going in deep and you're asking Bale to kind of be tracking a left back for the last 20 minutes, you might be better off taking him off the pitch. You still got the pace to utilise with Daniel James on the other side and give him a break, because he's going to find every 4 days difficult to manage now, I think.
No, I totally agree.
Let's talk about...
The thing with Bale in fantasy, it's worth a mention, is that he's a midfielder, right? And we know already that the forward slots are jammed with so many players, but midfield is that little bit harder. So I think the fact that he's classified as a midfielder actually makes him a little bit more attractive from a fantasy point of view.
You're assuming Ross is playing Euro Fantasy. You're playing, mate?
Yeah.
All right, we're right then.
Yeah. Ross is ready to tell me that he's going to save $3 million by getting Dan James compared to Gareth Bale. But if you've got the money to spend and the midfield slots are the ones that are proving potentially a little bit more tricky to fill, I think Bale as a midfielder is way more attractive than if he was a striker in this game, for example.
Oh, yeah, completely. And I mean, the good thing with Bale, he'd be on penalties and free kicks. So I don't know. I think he's $9.5 million in our Euro game. And it's pricey, Serge. It's pricey.
It is. You kind of said it's going to be low scoring games, right? Mm-hmm. Don't think anyone thinks different to that. I know you obviously had the 3-0 win against Russia 5 years ago, but I don't think we're not expecting a Wales result like that this time round. I don't think you were actually, it was a weak group. It wasn't a great England team. Slovakia were average. Russia were awful. Obviously you had Northern Ireland last 16, then obviously the brilliant result against Belgium. I think Switzerland and Turkey are decent sides. You're capable of beating them, by the way, but they're just as capable of beating you as well. So I think getting a $9.5 million for a player you know can absolutely explode. Yeah. But I think it's doubtful that he will, Suj.
Mm.
Would you, if you had to go Bale or Daniel James in that, Ross, where would you go?
I'd go Dan James, but
six and a half.
Yeah, I wouldn't advise. I think the value in Wales really is probably with either Ward or Roberts. They're both 4.5. Just maybe someone on the bench or something to bring in. You know, I think, like I say, I think we'd be tough to break down and beat. And I wouldn't put it past if we scramble a couple of nil nils.
So you can make a case, actually, to say we're talking about Bale and James, but Ramsey at 8.5, if he's going to be playing false nine, might even be the better call, actually.
Yeah.
You think Ward or Roberts defensively? Roberts has had some good attacking returns, actually, for Swansea in the Championship this year. I guess you'd prefer Roberts over Rodon for exactly that chance of being higher up the pitch.
Yeah, I think isn't Rodon 5? It's just that extra 0.5.
I think Rodon's 4.5, actually, mate.
Okay. Well, yeah, I wouldn't say he is, to Rodon, but I just Roberts 4.5. Just he gets forward a bit more, just more likely to swing a cross in. I mean, I haven't seen much from Rodon in regards to attacking corners or free kicks. Like, I don't think he's like a target man, I guess. But you never know, you know, he could pick something up. But it's in our defenders, it's the budget enablers that we offer. You know, I wouldn't be targeting any of our attacking options.
The problem as well is so many good other 4.5 million defensive options. It's difficult to make a case, actually, to go with the Welsh guys. I think I'll be going without, so to be honest, in terms of Welsh players. I think so, in all honesty. What about yourself, Ross?
Yeah, I haven't got any. I'm not touching them.
That's why we've not spoken about Welsh fantasy players for the last half hour. Before we finish, Ross, we must ask you your thoughts on Ryan Giggs, who I understand he's now got a court date decided for January, which is ages away. I can't help but have the feeling that if he was England manager, he would have been sacked. There wouldn't be a waiting for a court decision. What's the feeling amongst Welsh fans at the moment?
I mean, Giggs was up against it anyway, so most Wales fans wouldn't have been happy with his appointment in the first place, and that's because
he only turned up for qualifiers and not friendlies.
Yeah, and ultimately, I do think that, you know, I'm one of those that I think Ferguson had a bigger part to play, and like I touched on earlier, you know, they were kind of training and in school on school pitches and stuff, and Ferguson just didn't want Giggs getting injured in a meaningless friendly against, I don't know, Lithuania or, you know, whatever it was. But obviously, from a Wales fan's point of view, we do absolutely anything to put that jersey on just once. So it's tough. It is a tough one with Giggs. I think he'd won people around when he qualified for, obviously, 2020. And I think he was really starting to get somewhere with that attitude and people kind of giving him his chance. But then since this has come round, it's a tough one to call, isn't it? Because if they sacked him, they'd be saying, if he's proven guilty, I think he has to get the sack, doesn't he? But
Yeah.
But obviously, I think you're just, you know, innocent until proven guilty, I guess. And it's just giving him that chance. I mean, Rob Page has been quite, you know, he said this is Giggs's bunch of players, you know, that's the kind of general attitude at the moment amongst the Welsh camp is that Giggs is still the manager, but obviously Page is taking charge. But I don't see him coming back personally.
No, I can't either, because I think even the allegation is ABH basically against his ex-girlfriend and I think sister. And there's counts of harassment that they're chasing up that he's potentially going to get charged for as well. I mean, even if he gets off, unfortunately, it's going to be hanging around and people are going to be thinking, it's obviously well documented what happened with his brother's missus as well, right? Mm, yeah. So unfortunately, he's now come across as the type of individual. If you were with your wife, Ryan Giggs, yeah, come meet my wife. I don't think you would. let's be really honest about it. What do you think, Sid? If it was the same with Gareth Southgate and gone through this, he wouldn't be suspended, would he? Be sacked.
How fast did Sam Allardyce get the boot with his whole bun thing?
Well, to be fair, Sam Allardyce was caught red-handed, wasn't he, in fairness?
Yeah, but they didn't muck about. It was days. They just didn't hang around. They were like, you know what, even this is not really what you want from the England manager. So I think, yeah, he would be gone. And I think Giggs, they probably should move him on, to be honest.
I can't see even, you've got to wait till January now. So if he gets cleared, wham, does he come back and do the March internationals and everything's just okay? There's got to be even players within the squad to be thinking, don't know about that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And like I said, I mean, it was hard enough for him to kind of win fans over in the first place. You know, there's still plenty of fans who don't think he's the man for the job. But obviously, the performances on the pitch kind of give him the benefit of the doubt with many, I guess. But following this, it'll just be another excuse for Welsh fans to kind of jump on and say, you know, criticise him, and rightly so, obviously. But, you know, even if he is found not guilty, I just don't know how they can get rid of him if he doesn't kind of walk himself, I guess.
You can sack managers.
Yeah.
It happens, I mean, quite happens a lot.
I know. But what I mean by that is, like, if he's proven not guilty,
well, now he's going to take back over the team. It's obvious because surely they would have sacked him by now.
Yeah, exactly that, yeah. So but I just don't know how or what that means or how that's going to look if that is the case, I guess. Especially if you know, what if we go out to these Euros now and Page does well? And,
yeah.
You know, it's like going back to gigs then. And I mean, Kiefer Moore will be happy, but, but yeah.
Yeah, I think if you get out of the group, which there's every chance that you will, particularly with obviously the third place options and stuff. I think, as we've said, Turkey and Switzerland are decent sides, right? Not going to be pushovers. If you get out of the group, get last 16 again, I think that's decent achievement. You'd have every right to carry on. I think there's subtle differences in what Rob Page has been doing since he's taken over from Ryan Giggs. And I agree, it just feels like going, you almost be going backwards a bit. Like, give the lad a chance. He's obviously kind of introduced his false nine idea. I feel like it suits the way you want to play. I think you might surprise a few teams this summer. Yeah, it's a really, really strange situation. I think from Giggs' point of view as well, I mean, obviously, if he does get charged, he's probably going to do some jail time. How does he doesn't come back to football at all, does he? Reputation, absolutely tarnished. Talking about Premier League Hall of Fame, they won't put his name involved with it at the moment, right, will they? Because of all this, he's arguably the Premier League's greatest ever player. I was just looking, his Wales caps, 64. Played 64 times for Wales. He played for 40 years, basically.
Yeah,
how can he only have 64 caps? Obviously, I'm exaggerating. But 64 caps over his career, what's that, about 3 appearances a year on average? Dodgy.
That's not good, is it?
But he's a dodgy guy. I think whatever happens, we've definitely learned there's something not right. You don't go off with your brother's missus, do you? End podcast.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Ross, thank you so much for joining us. Do you want to tell everybody where they can find you on Twitter or anywhere else on the internet that you do want them to find you?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember my newest. Obviously, I had my last account taken away. So I think it's Corf_FPL, I think.
No? Spot on.
That's it. James knows as well as anyone. At Corf_FPL to find Ross on Twitter. And I'm sure he'll be tweeting and supporting the Welsh Dragons, James.
Good luck to you, mate. Listen, Saturday, 2:00, I'll be willing you to win. No doubt about it, mate.
100%. I'm exactly the same. Got a soft spot for Wales. So
until you go really well, just like levels, semi-finals enough.
is about good enough. As long as we're in the semis too, James.
I don't win it. Be good, but don't win it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your advice. James, do you want to let everybody know what else they got to look forward to in the next couple of days?
I shall. Definitely. We've got Paul McNulty joining us tomorrow to have a focus on Scotland, similar to what we've just done. Ross as well. Just want to give a shout out to the Happy Hour boys. I recorded with them last night on a podcast on England, so that's part why we've not done one like this. That's going to premiere on YouTube, 3 p.m. UK time, today. We've got Paul, as I said, tomorrow on our network. Thursday, we're going to go through a bit of our watch list for Euro Fantasy, and we'll do final drafts for the game on Friday before the tournament kicks off with Italy and Turkey in Wales's group on Friday evening.
Fantastic. And when we get down to the watch list and drafts, you can I'm just looking forward to owning Leroy Sané in a fantasy game again, James.
Anyway,
everybody stay subscribed wherever you're listening to the podcast. Hit the bell or the notification icon or the like button or whatever it may be, and you'll get notified as soon as our podcasts go live. Other than that, just stay safe.
Ross, how do you say come on Wales in Welsh?
Come on Wales, but
love it. Good luck, mate. Cue music, please, man child.
Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.